Hello, this is Sean Kennedy. I'm the editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Nursing. And this May, we have flight nurses on our cover. We have a cover photo by Jason Smith, who's teamed up with Life Flight of Maine, a statewide medical helicopter service that transports critically ill and injured patients. And he spent a 12-hour shift with flight nurses Stephen Babin and a flight paramedic Pete Allen, and did several flights with them and talked to them a little bit about their jobs. Here today with me, I have two flight nurses from the University of Chicago who are going to talk to us a little bit about their jobs and what made them be these high-flying nurses and some of the issues that they face both in their flights and as professionals in a flight nurse career. So we have with us Scott DeBoer. Scott, would you introduce yourself?
My name is Scott DeBoer, and I'm a flight nurse, as Sean said, for the University of Chicago Hospitals.
And we also have Terry Campbell.
Hi. Good morning. This is Terry Campbell. I'm also a flight nurse with the University of Chicago.
So as I mentioned to the both of you a few minutes ago, as a former ER nurse, I was always enamored of flight nurses and feeling that would be a great way to spend my career. But in the New York City area, there weren't any flight nurse transport companies. So tell me how both of you decided to pursue this career option. Scott?
For me, it was reasonably simple. I was working in the emergency room and at the intensive care unit at a Indiana community hospital. And this was a little over 20 years ago, back in the days when you remember the commercial for the deodorant company, mm-hmm. and their motto was, never let them see you sweat. And I remember distinctly having, especially in the emergency room, we would have just really horribly sick kids that would come in. And in most emergency rooms, we don't see that many truly sick children. You see lots of children, but not that many that are horribly sick or injured, happily. And when they would come in, understandably, everybody, the nurses, the physicians, respiratory therapists, everybody was stressed out of their mind with a horribly sick kid. And we just wanted to get them the heck out. And I remember distinctly on multiple occasions when the flight crew would come and happily take our children away, it really was that commercial, you never let them see them sweat. No matter how bad things were going, no matter what happened, they just seemed to be calm, pleasant, professional, and essentially at that moment, I absolutely knew unquestionably what I wanted to do with my career.
Yeah. And have you always been with University of Chicago?
I've been with the University of Chicago now for a total of 17 years. And I've also flown as a flight nurse down in Peoria, Illinois, and also in the North Rim of the Grand Canyon for a while as well.
Wow. How about you, Terry?
Well, my career path was a little bit different than Scott's. My original specialty was in high-risk obstetrics. And I absolutely loved it, but after doing it for about 10 years, I was feeling pretty professionally stagnant and bored. And at that time, I was starting to help out our emergency department, which is a very busy level one trauma center just outside of Chicago. And I was terrified. I realized there was a whole lot of medicine out there that I really didn't know anything about. And so I decided to pluck up my courage and transfer to the emergency department because I just wanted to challenge myself professionally. My very first day in the emergency department, we had a Metra train accident with a school bus accident. It was very tragic, and we had multiple patients flown in, and I pretty much sat there with my back against the wall, terrified, thinking, oh, I made a bad decision. I should have stayed in labor and delivery. And when I went home that night and I had talked to my family, I said, you know what, if I ever get smart enough or if I ever get brave enough, I want to be a flight nurse. And then over the next 5 years, I got every certification I could think of. I took advantage of every learning opportunity I could think of. And I started flying 10 years ago. And I have loved it ever since.
Now, a lot of people will ask, you know, as you're flying and in these very cramped high-tech helicopters, you know, aren't you worried about the weather and helicopters crashing and just the whole flight itself? Does that enter into your minds when you're going on one of your flight missions?
Terry?
You know what? I have to say I have tremendous faith in our pilots. We also take advantage of all the high-tech equipment, making sure that we're paying attention to weather minimums. We're talking to the tower at the airports. So we really have a lot of information that helps to keep us safe. So I really honestly, personally don't have any fears when I'm flying. Sometimes my really, really sick patients make me nervous, but the actual helicopter and the mode of transportation doesn't concern me at all.
I agree.
You agree, Scott?
All of our pilots, for the most part, and in most programs across the country, the majority of them are ex-military, so they've been in far worse situations than anything we're ever going to put them through in the civilian world.
Mm-hmm.
And happily, the way that it has been for all the years that I've been flying, so just now for 20 years, is that you remember the standard is that when a call first comes in through the communications specialist or the dispatcher, when the pilot is asked, can they fly, the pilots don't know what we're going for. And that really is important, because what I've been told is, if you look back in, you know, aeromedical history was, and it makes sense, if pilots were told they were going after a two-year-old from a house fire, their chance of wanting to maybe kind of push the limits a little bit, because it's a two-year-old, were pretty good. It's normal human nature.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if you know you were going after someone that was 97 years old, you know what, maybe we really shouldn't go ahead and make this flight.
So that takes out any...
It takes it out of the equation.
Pilots
are simply say, we have a flight request to go to X city. And that's all there is to it. And it's all they know. And then we tell them, you know, yes, you know, we can go, or no, we can't. And okay.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it a whole lot easier. I agree with Terry. I trust our pilots implicitly. And happily, all the programs across the country that we're aware of, they call it the 3 to go, 1 to say no,
mm-hmm.
which is a nice way of saying that you have typically on most aeromedical programs, you have 3 crew members. You have a pilot up front, and then you have the medical crew in the back. We call it the blood-brain barrier. All the brains are up front, all the blood's in the back. But the idea is all 3 people, if you look outside, if you're sitting on the helipad and you're like, you know what, this just doesn't feel right. All 3 people have to say, yes, indeed, let's go do this flight. And the respectable programs across the country also have that ability that if somebody says, you know what, I just don't feel right about this, then it's it. You just don't do the flight.
Right. Now,
and that's the way it should be. It really makes it a whole lot easier.
Now, several years ago, there seemed to be a spate of crashes that occurred within a short period of time. And one of the issues that came up was whether the market, so to speak, was getting crowded and that people were flying, you know, perhaps other people may not fly, but people would fly because they didn't want the competitors, you know, getting the flight because the hospitals would, you know, just call the next available flight crew or flight company. What would you say to that?
Kat, should I talk to him about IAC?
Please, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So out of all of those very, very tragic losses that we had in the air medical community, only some of those had to do with weather. And I think that's what you're asking, Sean, is, you know, were we out there flying when we shouldn't have been flying because of competition, because of needing to keep, you know, the bills paid?
Right.
So one thing that the state of Illinois has done that we're very proud of is all the air medical programs in the state of Illinois and actually in the St. Louis area also belong to a group called the IACT, which is the Illinois Association of Critical Care Transport. And as an air medical community, we've decided to be very proactive. We're trying to prevent something called helicopter shopping. So let's say a community hospital has a patient that is beyond their capabilities to care for. They appropriately so want to transport that patient out. So they'll call flight program A and say, hey, can you get this patient, you know, moved somewhere else? And flight program A says, you know what, I'm telling you, the weather looks pretty skosh here. It's just not safe. So then the community hospital calls flight program B, flight program C, and keeps going down the list until they can get somebody to accept the flight. So as the air medical programs in the state of Illinois, we decided, you know what, we need to be proactive to make sure that this doesn't happen. So if any of the air medical programs in Illinois turn down a flight, we call the other air medical programs and we let them know, hey, community hospital called us. We can't do it because of weather, and this is what we've got going on. Now, because of different geographic areas in the state, another program may be able to do that flight safely, but it has tremendously increased the communication between the air medical programs. For a very simplistic way of saying it, we play together really well in the sandbox now. Mm-hmm. We're removing competition, and it's about safety for the air medical crew and safety for our patients. And I'm very proud to be part of that organization, and it's done a tremendous amount for us.
Well, that's good to hear.
It really does make a difference. It's not necessarily that way, regrettably, all across the country yet, because you're right, competition, it's a business like anything else.
Yeah.
And as I'm sure Terry would agree, in a majority of cases that we pick up, especially if you look in the Chicago area, there's now no less than 4 different helicopter teams.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
you know,
where
they
could
be at a hospital within realistically 10 to 15 minutes of each other.
Now, where do you do most? Is it from rural into University of Chicago where you're going to pick up? And is it the case that it really would be that much faster by helicopter than by ground transport?
Scott, do you want to answer that?
Sure. I think the majority of what our particular facility does is inter-hospital. And it's going from one hospital, so essentially a smaller hospital, to a bigger hospital. And then the difference is a fair amount of places across the country are the opposite, especially such as when we were down in, you know, the north rim of the Grand Canyon. You know, that was a completely different story because then we were picking up people off the side of the road in the canyon, you know, stuff of that sort, because to try to get to a hospital was a multiple-hour experience. So
right.
That's kind of a different story. But in our area, in the Chicago area, from our particular team, about half of what we do is by helicopter, about half of what we do is by ambulance. Because if you can get somewhere faster by ambulance, then it would be to go upstairs and actually, you know, fire up the blades, fly over there, land, and go across the street. Then we go ahead and go by ambulance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it has changed over the years. It used to be, I mean, years ago, Terry, I'm sure, remembers as well, that if you had somebody that just had an intra-aortic balloon pump, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they were in the ICU, automatically this person would be flown to whatever facility. And over the years, more and more ambulance teams that have, you know, both critical care paramedics and a fair amount of them have nurses as well, have popped up, and more stuff is going now by ambulance versus going by helicopter.
Mm-hmm. I see. And
there's many things that goes into it. You know, acuity of the patient, duration of transport, availability of staff and equipment. So it's multifactorial. One technique that our program uses is we triage our patients. So it's not like we get a phone call and then we grab our helmets and go up to the helipad. We do an assessment of the patient and we decide what is the safest mode of transport. And sometimes, to Scott's point, it's by air and sometimes it's by ground.
And for flight nurses, what's the usual issue that or kind of the pain points when you're transporting someone? Is it operating in a small space? Is it the flight itself causes issues in trying to monitor patients? What's the piece that is the most difficult for flight nurses opposed to monitoring a patient on the ground?
Terry, the doctors?
Well, I would say limited resources. You know, in a hospital, you have any and every resource available for you. You might have to wait for it to come down the hall. But in a helicopter or a fixed-wing airplane or an ambulance, you only have the resources that are within your vehicle. So that's a limitation, although we're pretty good about making sure that we have the essentials with us at all times.
Yeah.
And Scott, what did you say?
Oh, the physicians.
he's kidding.
No, it is. It's a smaller environment, and like Terry said, you don't have the ability to go down the help and say, oh, I'd like anesthesia to come and help us out. Right. Because if you're up at a couple thousand feet and you're half an hour away from the closest hospital, you're pretty much it.
Right. But it sounds like...
So if a patient needs something and you don't have it, well, that's a problem. Then you have to improvise, which is, you know, pretty much the hallmark of flight nursing, which is what most of us love, is you get the variety.
Well, that's what I was going
to
say.
And
that's
you get
also,
to improvise, which
that's
is great.
Also the challenge of doing this critical work in a less than optimum area
right.
in space, but yet as optimum as it can be, and that's also part of the challenge in that
that's
career.
That's my favorite
I
part. Is the I personally, it's the autonomy. That's the part that I really like. Is just you're expected to be able to look at your patient, assess your patient, and do what needs to be done.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Critical thinking, you know, it is truly a hallmark with flight nursing because you have to be not only assessing what's going on now, but clearly anticipating what is all the potential badness out there and making sure that you already have plan A, plan B, and plan C in case those things arise.
Right. People typically think about all the glamorous is probably not the right word, but a lot of people describe it, the procedures. And procedures are fun. I mean, you get to intubate and put in chest tubes and, you know, stuff of that sort. And the procedures are procedures. The part that most flight nurses really enjoy, again, is that it's that autonomy. It's like Terry said, it's a critical thinking. It's looking at your patient and putting everything all together and saying, okay, if I was in an emergency room, I would do this. But now I'm 2,000 feet up and I have no help. So therefore, right. I'm probably going to need to do this.
And for patients, what's the, I mean, are most patients very fearful or in the sense that they feel if they're transporting me and I must need, you know, I must really be very ill or my injuries must really be serious if they can't take care of me here. Is there a lot of, you know, allaying fears is a big part of what you have to do with the patients or are many of the patients sedated? Scott,
Dad, I'll let you answer that.
My patients are sedated.
Yours are.
But if the patients are awake, for the most part, at least in my experience, most of them had been pretty good. They know they're sick, which is why we're flying them.
Right.
But with our crew, I think our most junior flight nurse has been there for 7 or 8 years, so all of them have a very large quantity of experience with this. And it's really pretty good. It's kind of like being in the emergency rooms, I'm sure. You can walk in and just kind of quickly allay someone's fears relatively quickly, and people do really well. The fun part we run into is we still, every once in a while, get somebody who remembers the time of the Korean War and MASH.
Oh.
And we asked, you know, I have somebody last year who was, you know, old enough to remember that. And he looked over, and he was having a heart attack, and we were flying him into the cath lab. And he's like, you know, so, sir, do I have to fly outside in the skids? You know, it's really cold outside.
Oh, that's funny. Like, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, we just told him you don't have an HMO. You can come inside. It's okay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, and again, I think most flight crews, although to Scott's point, you know, we like the procedures. We like the high tech. But not to sound cliche, most of us are very also high touch, meaning that we understand that our patients are in critical conditions and some of them may not make the transport or they might not survive on the other end of the transport. I think many of us really pride ourselves on our compassion. The residents I fly with are always teasing me because they say I always talk to unconscious people, which is true. I always introduce myself. I hold their hands. I talk to them. I tell them I'm going to keep them safe. I'm going to take away their pain. And most of the time, you know, just to Scott's point, they are unconscious, or at least I give them enough drugs so that they will sleep through things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're with them for a very small but very critical part of their medical experience. And so we tend to have very holistic care.
Well, that's good to hear. And is there a website, so if our listeners want to know more about flight nurses or how they can get information, is there a website for your association you can say?
It's www.astna.org. So astna.org. It's the Air and Surface Transport Nurses Association. It used to be the National Flight Nurses Association. and then they evolve to incorporate people who do ground, meaning in the ambulance transport as well. So it changed from just flight to all that is critical care transport. But it's a really great website just in regards to giving overviews of flight nursing, the typical top 10 questions for people who say, I want to be a flight nurse, what do I need to do? Stuff of that sort is all on there as well.
That's great.